Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
That was good. When there's music playing, there's a bit of laughing going on in there. It's all right. Alrighty. Tommy, welcome to the podcast, mate.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Looking forward to it.
Bit of a trip down from Redcliffe. Wasn't too bad.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. No traffic. Makes it easy. So got the work car as well. We got given a new work car, so, you know, no petrol, no tolls, no nothing. So it's easy for me.
Oh, sweet. I don't have to pay your bill or anything.
No, nothing.
So tell me, you're the general manager at Ballycarra Retirement Village. You played Queensland Cup for over 10 years and now working full time. How's working at a retirement facility going for you?
No, it's been interesting. It's been my one and only job. So following university, I finished a degree in exercise science, so exercise physiology. Got a job, well, my mother got me the job down at an aged care facility doing the activities. And to be honest, when I first turned up, I had no idea. You know, we're from Papua New Guinea, no idea what an aged care facility was. I didn't realise that, you know, lapoons or, you know, seniors could go and just live in a facility without any sort of family or anything like that. So it was a bit different when I first walked in. But again, what brought me back was Happy Gilmore. That was sort of my thing about aged care facilities. But
inspired.
It sort of inspired me, Ben Stiller. Inspired me to be better than what I saw on that.
You don't walk in and do the whole milk thing.
No. I'm more positive, I'd like to think. But yes, started there and just worked my way through. For 10 years through different aspects of the business. You know, one big part was I co-designed and implemented and created a wellness program for seniors in a new facility we got there, which is booming at the moment. I think, you know, it's got 300 or 400 members, clients that go through it. So utilizing exercise physiology, which was very different at the time. And then to my role now, which are diversified out to, village general manager. So nice big spot, 32 acres out at Scarborough, which is right next to the water. 290 villas and apartments. We got two aged care facilities there as well. So they're 92 beds, I think. 316 residents, as well as about 40, 50 staff. So, it's a big job, but I would only think that I'm able to do it because of the background and coming from Papua New Guinea, you know, having that really high respect for seniors and their experiences and where they've come from really has put me in good stead for, I guess, where I am now and hopefully for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I want to talk about your PNG background in a second, but just before we get to that, being around a lot of older people who have experienced life, what are some key lessons that you learn from a day-to-day basis?
Look, I think the biggest thing is just understanding that the residents, the people there have been through and seen more things than we'll ever see in our life. So understanding that their words are worthwhile listening to. You know, we've got people there that have been through two wars, both world wars. You won't see that again. They've experienced change in terms of technology, going from no TVs to what it is now, and us trying to develop and move forward with technology use for them. You know, people in their 70s, 80s and 90s. But just, you know, big things are just about, you know, respect, you know, trusting yourself, really listening and understanding who each individual is. I think that's the most important thing which I found working there. And, you know, listening is huge. You listen to people, and whether it's an issue or not an issue, people just want to be heard and want to be felt like, you know, they're worth something, and they've got some sort of prosperity for, I guess, the rest of their life. So just truly interesting people. And I think you sort of learn something off each and every one of them, just small takeaways about their life or what they've been through, because, as I said, you know, none of us will ever experience any of that in our lifetime at all.
Do you find it helps you?
I definitely do. I definitely do. And I find they're really good listeners, as I said, for myself, but for them too. And they give really good advice. And, you build a lot of trust in a lot of people, but certain individuals there who've whether they've their CEOs, proper CEO, previous CEOs in their careers, or they're, you know, doctors or lawyers or people who've just well versed and well traveled, who've had very similar life experiences, who just give you some advice more so when you're unsure of where you are at that time.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about your background in PNG. You were born there.
Yeah, born in Alatau.
Yeah, Alatau. What was it like? Do you remember?
There? Yeah, look, I remember fondly. We moved to Australia when I was 7, more so for schooling. But you know, I remember growing up, I loved every bit of it. Playing footy on the road, like most Papua New Guineans. That's where I learnt my toil. You know, just going fishing every day, going to the garden and getting whether it was Ibeka or some form of greens and cooking that up along with whatever we've just caught. And then just having this real relaxed, fun lifestyle that, you know, you probably don't get here in Australia, but it's just, yeah, truly amazing to grow up with all your cousins, you know, brothers and sisters, just having a good time all the time.
Do you still have family who live there?
Yeah, so a majority of my family still live there. So I've got my dad grew up in Papua New Guinea. The rest of his family were born there, and obviously my mum's from Milne Bay. But other than that, everyone else is back there. So we try to get there every year. And obviously COVID's been an issue, but love going back and having family time and fishing and going back to the village and, you know, going out to our islands and fish and do all the bits and pieces that you don't get a chance to do here.
Yeah. Is there houses on water there as well?
No, not there. No, not there. Close enough to the water, but no, nothing like Moresby.
All the beaches are still
pristine. Yeah. Like, you just walk out from the village out at Kalakala on Ferguson Island and, you know, you see just trevally, big trevally flying around, bait fish. It's just, it's amazing to think. It's just right at your feet. You don't see it here. But, you know, you get the chance to go fishing and try to catch big fish is amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome, eh? You know, when you were growing up there, you're 7 years old. You probably don't remember, you know, too many tough times back there.
No. Look, I was fortunate. Obviously, my mum, she always wanted more. More to support her family. So she, when she finished school in the village, she went out, she wanted to be a dental therapist. So she went out herself and went studied and went to college and did what she needed to do. And I sort of followed with the rest of my family. And fortunately, as a dental therapist, she met my dad over at Caviang, and they both fell in love. And they eventually moved back to Alatau and had a nice, successful sort of fish and chip shop. Arcade games. We had so many arcade games. Like, it was always busy. It was amazing growing up playing arcade games every day of their life. And a secondhand shop as well. So, you know, I was fortunate. I grew up with a really good family background, but, you know, my family were doing well for themselves. So, you know, we had fun, but you always got to support your family. That's the thing. So, one in, all in. And I know sometimes they face tough times, but, you know, we all stick together, and that's how we move forward.
Yeah, and the arcade games. You must have been the most popular kid.
Oh yeah, you know, everyone wanted a free game.
Did you have to use to pay 20 toya to play?
Yeah.
Remember that in the village?
Yeah, hey? we had six of them, seven of them. It was amazing. My favorite game, I can't think of what it is, but it's the one with the invader planes, and you're flying and you shoot, and then you collect further ammo and your gun gets better and you just start shooting everywhere. I still remember that and just playing that all day. And then Slugfest, I think it's called,
yeah.
Something like that. And it's a little guy and he runs around shooting people.
Pac-Man,
we had, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing. And I think we only left really for schooling, but there was a huge fire in Allertown, I think it would have been 94. Huge fire, wiped out most of the stores there. And fortunately, we were renting the store. And with the big fire, the people who owned that store needed that back for their business to continue their business. So it helped with the decision to move. Otherwise, who knows what would happen. I'm pretty sure my mum and dad had me ready to go to Nudgee College. So, I'm probably fortunate that, I'm not sure if I would have liked that. But, it worked out well.
Yeah. In terms of rugby league, when did you start playing?
I think I would have started playing when I was two. My uncles used to always play on the street in Toptown, in Allertown, and I used to be on their shoulders. That's how I started, and then it went from there. So, in a place where soccer is probably bigger than rugby league, majority of the Toptown boys where I grew up were rugby league guys. So, learnt my trade there, to be honest.
Yeah, and obviously your parents have been supportive of you playing rugby league.
Oh, I loved it. Loved it. My dad and mum both love the games. I remember my dad used to always talk about all the grand finals. Big South Sydney fan, so he went to when he was living in Maroubra. He went to every grand final from the 70s. So just telling stories of those things was truly amazing. And then I think too, coming back and coming to Redcliffe and playing at Redcliffe, and he's still my favourite player. Tommy O'Reilly was playing for the Dolphins. So coming from Papua New Guinea and seeing geez, there's a Papua New Guinean there and he's playing for the Dolphins, like the biggest team in the Queensland Cup in my eyes at the time. It was inspiring. Sort of was like, that's where I want to be. I want to play for Redcliffe one day.
Oh, that's awesome. I've met Tommy a few times. Real nice guy.
Yeah, real good guy.
He's from similar area? PNG?
No, I think he's from Moresby.
Okay. He's a crack up. I'll catch up with him, Marcus and Johnny Wilson.
Down the Gold Coast.
Yeah. He's a real nice guy. Did you always have a dream of playing rugby league?
The dream was never NRL or anything. The dream was to play for Papua New Guinea. That was always the dream. And I think that was more so inspired after watching Tommy O'Reilly, but then after watching the 2000 Rugby League World Cup, I think Papua New Guinea made it right through to quarters and they lost to Wales. That was what I wanted to do. NRL would have been a good byproduct of what I wanted, but the dream was always Papua New Guinea. And fortunately I got the chance to do it and, that sort of ticked the box in my eyes.
Do you remember the phone call you got to, that you were going to play for the Kumuls?
So I played a few other games that didn't count as anything, but the test against Cook Islands, I just remember, I can't remember, it might have been Johnny. Johnny just called me up and just said, just get ready, put in for work and you're going to play this game. I was truly amazed and honoured to get that opportunity, because I know when I was 18 I went and played the Nationals versus Residents and I made the tour squad to go to Europe, so it was pretty good being 18 then, and I played just all the side games as opposed to the three test matches. So yeah, it took a while to get there with all the other games, but every moment, whatever the jersey was, and any time I got the chance to play over there was all the same to me. Like, didn't matter if it was a test match or not. It was, being able to represent Papua New Guinea, but represent Milne Bay more so than anything, size 28, people don't play rugby league. And growing up there, I think it meant so much for me. So, any of those opportunities were amazing.
Yeah, that international residence game, how'd you find that?
Oh, I didn't mind it. Yeah, it was, when you first turn up and being young and you just see, you see these residents on the other side, the guys are big, they're big guys. I'm like, holy shit. I was probably still 60 kilos. I could have been a jockey at that stage, but I was just looking at it, holy shit. But
Lloyd Robson?
Yeah. Proper packed, proper packed. I was like, holy shit. Everyone everywhere. But it was just, once you got out there, it's all in that moment. You're just playing in a moment. Nothing really matters at that time. But it was a really good experience. To get that chance to play over there.
Yeah, that my first year, 2008, the trial game.
Yeah.
Residents Internationals.
Yeah.
I remember just being warned by a few of the boys, man, just be careful out there, the ground's hard.
Yeah.
you're going to cop a swinging arm from the size of this.
Watch out.
I was prepped really well. But I remember one of the games, Charlie Wobble would grab me and just swung me head face into the ground. I felt how hard that ground was that day. And just the heat.
Oh, the heat, the crowd, the atmosphere. I think for me was sitting in the – I remember sitting in the bus. I'm a good mate, Trev Exeter, and I was sitting in the bus because I played him before, just sitting in the bus, and he was like, oh, look, the game's all right, the ground's hard, the atmosphere is great, but the ride when you're a kilometre out from the stadium is going to be hectic. I was like, oh, what do you mean hectic? He's like, oh, it's just going to be heaps of people around, probably going to be pushing the bus and – You'll see police running around with chains and chasing people. They're not going to hit them. The guys will all get away, but they're chasing around. I was like, yeah, righto. Just send the bus. You get ready before you go down because, you know, it's just the training shed. It's terrible. Yeah. You don't get changed. I wouldn't even use the toilet. I was peeing outside. But, yeah, look, okay, like a K out and then you're getting close and you're just like, oh, there's a lot of people. And then all of a sudden the whole bus is converged with people and they're just – the bus is shaking. You're like, holy shit, this is what it's like to play rugby league. And the fans, like, it was just an amazing experience.
Yeah.
It really was an amazing experience. A bit shocking at first, but, yeah, really amazing.
Man, they're my favourite times in PNG, especially the early days, Lloyd Robson over.
Yep.
You wouldn't even go in the change rooms.
No.
Apparently there was a snake in there one year.
Oh, it would surprise me. They were scary times. I remember it could have been 2009, I think it was – probably his 13 game and, you know, JT and Petro and like it was a stacked team. I think we only just lost, but it was old school.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
It was packed, and I think this time got real rowdy, and they put the tear gas out just to settle the crowd. Like, we'd get down on the floor just lying there like that. I think it was five minutes. It all swept away, and we're back up playing. I was like, oh, everyone was calm, though.
Yeah.
But I think it's just because that team was just stacked with guys that probably – you know, you're surprising that their teams didn't make the NRL, so they were playing. Like, it was, yeah, it was nice.
Yeah, it's good memories. It's a little bit different now with the stadium there. Now you played there.
Yeah, yeah.
We played that England Knights game.
Yeah, it's definitely different. You don't get that same feel.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just good to see the stadium there. But, again, yeah, you don't – you probably miss what rugby league was and that atmosphere because it's nothing you'll get to see again, really.
Yeah. At least you can use a toilet there.
Yeah, you can get changed.
Were you ever big on extras or anything like that in your younger years?
Yeah, yeah. Look, I knew I wasn't the greatest, most skilled player. You know, when I was 17, I wasn't even making the A side at Ready. 15, 16 is probably a bit too small. So, you know, I decided to hit the gym. And then from that point, I thought, well, I'm not sure if I hit my growth spurt yet because I was still pretty skinny, but I thought, you know, I'll work hard and I'll be fit. I'll make sure I can defend really well and I got good skills and they probably put me in good stead. So those little bits and pieces definitely put me ahead and eventually it sort of, you know, it starts to come too when you're playing footy, especially when you're conditioned to play well. And have you had Gilly?
Trevor?
Tony Guilfoyle train you before?
No.
He's notorious, like... He was full on, it was full on training when I started playing Colts. Like, it was the hardest training we've ever done.
Well, like endurance? Or?
No, just, yeah, a bit of everything, bit of everything and in your face the whole time. Yeah. You know, I've seen so many players, just stop and not come back and play. But, you know, that's why he's probably made it. He went to Bronx. He's down at Penrith and now he's at Dragons.
Yeah.
But he was always very scientific and had all new ideas. But, yeah, you proper flogged, proper flogged and – probably, yeah, been doing all those extras put me in good stead to be able to just be fit and be able to do it because it made it a lot easier. But, he definitely put more focus on doing additional extras in terms of gym and eating right and a few other things to put weight on.
Yeah. Just want to talk a little bit about Queensland Cup, juggling that with a 9-to-5. You seem to have been able to manage that pretty well, from start until now. You jumped, as soon as you finished uni, you went into a job.
Yep.
Able to play Queensland Cup for over 10 years. How did you find that?
I think firstly, it was great working where I was working. They were always understandable of that. It helped too that at Ballycar, they all love rugby league. So it was an instant connection for me, for whether it was the people in the care facility or out in the village itself. And that made it a hell of a lot easier. So to be able to travel, to train. I know when I went to East, probably a bit more harder with the drive and everything else. But, you know, when you love something and enjoy it, you're willing to go to any chance to be able to do it. So I was fortunate, as I said, work were really gave me that ability and understanding of what I wanted. So they were happy for me to do that. Yeah. I guess they saw me as a good employee, so they really pushed for me to be able to do whatever I wanted to do, sort of thing. And I was already in a manager role when we did the night stuff. You know, I think I had like 6 weeks off.
Yeah,
yeah, no problems at all. So it makes it easier knowing that, and knowing also that if I got injured, you know, I have a job. You know, I can go sit in the office and still do work. So that made it easier. Not being a tradesman as well, that, you know, my work was always there,
yeah,
whether I was injured or not.
Because a lot of the cup boys, they do trade work.
Yeah, yeah.
And that can be pretty hard when you get injured. And
yeah, look, I think it's really hard. Like, I think Queensland Cup players don't get paid enough money, considering the, I don't know, minimum for NRL is like 100 grand or something like that. I think they, you know, and now they've restricted Q Cup to maybe 40 grand. You know, a lot of those guys, you know, they bust their ass at work and then they turn up and train four times a week during preseason,
yeah,
three times during season plus a game. And then, you know, if you are a tradesman, you get injured, well, you know, you'll get $500 after 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But $500 compared to you being a tradesman, probably getting, you know, $1,200, $1,500 is a big thing. And then if you've got kids, that makes it really hard. So, you know, I'm lost for words when I think of those guys who, you know, they lay it all on the line. And you understand why there's so many mental health issues, because there's a lot of people who aren't in, who are trying, doing their best in life, and, you know, you get an injury, which means with your family, there's nothing there for you to support you. So, you know, there's probably more to do with pay and a bit more with winning the cup, because it's a strong competition. But I was fortunate that great job. I probably got paid pretty well, to be honest, as well. So, you know, I was always in a fortunate position.
Yeah, it must be real hard, eh, because you want to play rugby league. You want to enjoy it as much as you can. Some guys even playing Queensland Cup so they can make it to the next level. Yeah. So that's what they're hanging on to as well. And to be able to get injured and, you know, out of work for a bit, that would certainly test you out mentally.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely does. A lot of adversity for a lot of young footy players. I think it's great the NRL have come on board with the wellbeing initiative, and really focusing on especially young players. Like, you know, there's only a small percentage, 5%, that might make NRL. Yeah. You know, you really need to focus on something else as well. You know, that you can focus on two things at once,
yeah,
which, you know, you really should be doing, because whether you make it or not, after footy, you've got to be doing something else.
Yeah.
You know, unless you've invested really well or done well with your money, or you're at the top echelon of the game where you're commentating or got a after-game footy gig, you know, it's really important. And, you know, because a lot of people go and end up working in the mines, and look, that's a hard job, doing that stuff. So, you know, I would say people should be doing their best to try and get a trade or uni degree.
That's the majority of the players that are going to face that.
Exactly. It's amazing, because the big thing I found was the transition in retirement living. Like when you retire or you move into a retirement village or whatever that stage is, it's very similar to you finishing rugby league. You know, you're looking for a purpose or what's next. So it's very similar. It helps, I guess, for me in that sense, that I'm able to be able to sort of put myself in a position to sort of have an idea, be able to talk to residents, especially because, you know, when you, let's say someone's worked their whole life, 60, 70 years, and they decide to retire, well, you know, for them is what's next.
Yeah.
You know, and again, if you don't find that purpose, it makes it hard to keep doing what you want to do, or, you know, find some sort of fulfillment in life.
Yeah. You've mentioned purpose. I think if you can just elaborate a little bit more, what advice would you give to a young guy who's trying to make to the NRL, but they're missing out, and, you know, it's hard for them to find work elsewhere? Is there any kind of advice you'd be given to them?
Oh, there's a lot. There's a lot you could do, but you know, you there's lots of people in that position, obviously now. I guess you need to decide. You know, yes, you chase your dream, but that finding that middle section of what you want to do with your life. Some people don't have families, but you know, those who don't have families, it's you know, finding something that's going to find you some sort of fulfillment, because outside of footy, you need something to get away. Otherwise, you're going to focus too much on that. So, you know, whether that's studying or finding something that you really enjoy away from the game, I think is really important, especially at that sort of stage of your career.
Talking about your career during the Queensland Cup, what's your proudest moment playing there?
I think my proudest moment for Queensland Cup's probably all the mates. Like, to be honest, probably all the mates I've made across various teams and teams I've played in as well. You know, I would have loved to say grand final, but I lost four or five of those. The Q Cup grand finals. Yeah. No, but I'm, you know, longevity. I'm proud I made 200 Queensland Cup games. You know, I'm proud I played, you know, 120 odd games for the East, and I love that club as well as, you know, 70 something games for Redcliffe, where I grew up. So, you know, I don't say I have a lasting legacy that I would stick in my mind. Yeah. But I'm grateful for a career, I guess, that I enjoyed as well. So with any of that, it would have been, you know, I guess I played for Queensland Residents. That was great. You know, winning various awards, yeah. But I guess PNG was always the number one. I got the chance to do that. Yeah. So that'll outlast any other thing I did in my career anyway. So,
yeah.
You know, besides the birth of my kids, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, at least, you know, played in four or five grand finals. I played one in recently.
Yeah.
I lost that one.
Mate, losing one's all right. Yeah, I thought there was a theory of losing, you know, losing two, winning one, losing three, winning one, losing four, winning one. But no, it doesn't work out that way sometimes.
Oh, good teaching moment. take that positive out of it.
Yeah, that's the positivity. So I have to win life now. It's another grand final itself.
Yeah. Oh, that's the main grand final you want to win, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, just make sure we get ahead, especially now with my growing family. So, you know, yeah, and we're in a good position, in a really good position now. So, yeah, can't complain.
What do you think rugby league's taught you?
Rugby league's taught me about teams, how to treat people, respect, accountability, trust, all those sort of things. And it is interesting that you say that, because those specific things also – in this day and age and moving forward in any sort of organization really matters. It's how you bring people together. You know, how you treat people and really inspire them is important, especially in my industry and a lot of customer facing injuries. So it has taught me a lot. And, you know, a lot of times when you do have staff meetings and you bring it up, you know, not so much, you bring up that whole concept of teammates and what you do and people having each other's back and why you do it. You know, some staff will sort of roll their eyes because they don't understand it, but you know, over a period of time, people start to understand what a team is and what it feels like to be in team, even if you've never been in one, because you know, you're there to support each other and have each other's backs, and also whether you're a manager or you know, you're a cleaner, you treat each other the same. That's always been important. You know, when you say you know, someone's at the back there, that's where you are too. You know, we're all together. So, I think that's probably a really important life lesson that in any organisation, that's how it needs to work too. Because the most important people aren't your executives or your people running your business. It's actually the people delivering your services. Yeah. The way you treat them, because they're the people who are delivering to your clients, who then that's their touch point. So, you know, if they don't like the staff because, you know, the staff are having a bad day because you didn't listen or you're not doing what's right for them, well, you know, expect bad feedback or people coming, you know, to talk to you about what's going on. So, I think it's, those have really transitioned and transpired across my organisation and how I treat my staff as well.
Yeah. Do you have any goals now that you've finished playing footy?
Yeah, I want to be CEO. You know, I'd love to be a CEO in the next 5-6 years. I really see myself in that, getting there. And it's great. I had an open relationship with my CEO at work and, you know, some of these execs there. So they know what I aspire to be. They're very supportive of it. So, you know, hoping next 5-6 years, I'm somewhere in the aged care or retirement, or you know, it could be hotel industry. It's all sort of very similar in running a big organization.
Yeah. How old are you now?
33.
You're older than me, no? I'm 33. What month?
April.
Oh yeah, you got me covered. Not that it matters, but
no, but maybe young CEO before 40 or something.
Yeah, geez. That's it's good, man. It's certainly something to take away from this, because you know, I talked to a few Queensland Cup players and, you know, obviously NRL players. No one really has a clear goal or vision of what they want to do outside of rugby league. And I'm kind of in that position right now. I'm back in my career, so trying to work out what I want to do with life outside of rugby league. And I will certainly enjoy this podcast. I enjoy getting to know people and putting it out there, but it can be a scary thing. Mm. You get a bit nervous.
Yeah.
Just thinking, will I have the same joy, purpose as I did in rugby league? And, you know, may not be a big thing to most other people, but, you know, for most rugby league players or most athletes,
yeah,
I think they they feel the same.
Mm. It's definitely understanding that journey. You're never going to find something straight away, but you got to understand it's all part of a process to get to where you want to be. You know, I started doing at uni exercise physiology. I don't know if I wanted to do that, but I knew it'd sort of get me in sports. But by doing that, and then fortunately getting a job in an aged care facility, it sort of something changed. And well, this is probably somewhere I want to be as well. And you know, different opportunities and different things, doing different things, sort of put me instead to be where I am today. Like, you look at the biggest CEOs in the world, or the people with the most money, they never studied business at school, uni. I didn't ever study business at uni, but it's not, it's having a business savvy mind and understanding how to be innovative, but also understanding how to treat your staff and how to treat your clients and getting the best out of them, you know, more so than anything. But yeah, you know, you're a Joe Rogan, PNG radio. Yeah. Never know,
mate.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
This is early days. But in terms of how to, you know, motivate your staff, is there anything you go back to?
No, I think any job I've done, any manager role I've done, I've jumped right in deep end. I remember I decided, well, this is what I want to do when I was in aged care facility. I saw a lot of people in wheelchairs, and made really good relationships. And I was like, well, how do I do that? How do I get them the best out of them? So I started running a hydrotherapy program. So I'd load up the bus, drive up, figure out how to get on the bus, figure out how to all the lifts and that work. I went down, took them down to the pool,
yep,
got them out of the wheelchair. But then, as I was saying, then, you know, I wasn't a nurse or anything, but if I had to, you know, help shower them, help change, that's what I did. Taking over, when I took over housekeeping, I also look after housekeeping. First thing I did was jump in and start clean toilets,
yep,
cleaned houses. Understood what they were dealing with, because understanding everything that they do will better enhance your ability to know what they're doing, but also look at things that you can improve for them and support them. Similar with when I took over catering, I jumped in the kitchen.
Yeah,
you know, not as a cook, because you know that you have to have special qualifications for that, but you know, chopping up veggies,
yeah,
washing dishes, serving meals, all that, running. You know, we run big events, so I you know, I jumped straight in and started emceeing events with my CEO. So now I emcee big events as well at Ballycar. But yeah, just knowing every bit of how your business works and what your staff are dealing with, because as I said, like if they see you there,
yeah,
doing it, they understand that you're listening and you care and you want to exactly know what they're doing, but you're also going to fix any sort of issues if they come up or try your best, yeah. More so than anything.
You're not really, you know, talking down to them and
no, not at all. Not at all. Yeah. I think it shows that it's one of those things that shows that, you know, you're not the bloke that's sitting up here on the pyramid and telling people what to do. Yeah. You're the guy that's in front telling them, come with me, let's go and do this together. And that's, you know, ultimately that's what people want. People don't think they want that, but they actually want to be part of a feeling like they want to be part of a team.
Yeah.
They want to be inspired. And I think I remember reading I love Simon Sinek, motivational business speaker. And one of his things is, you know, great companies won't necessarily look at hiring skilled workers and motivate them. Great companies will always hire or recruit motivated people and inspire them. Mm. That's what you want, you know, because that's what you're after, ultimately, because that's going to deliver the best services for you. But ultimately you're going to have people that you've and staff that have always worked to you aspiring to be in higher positions. Yeah. So it's always going to work well. You always look inside.
Yeah, it's a tough thing to get someone to be part of your team when their attitude is just
And you're always going to get that. I think you get to the point, you know, if that happens, you know, you're always recruiting anyway, and it's about, you know, the culture you create within. Eventually people who don't want to jump on the train or be a part of it, they'll eventually squeeze themselves out or want to leave because they're just not happy, which is fine, because you're creating what you get to create. And it's always going to happen, because change is hard for anyone.
I know we spoke a little bit about Kumul's before, but do you remember the first time when you ran out, how you felt? I remember the first time I ran out, you know, it was an international versus residence game, but man, I cried.
Oh yeah,
listen to the national anthem.
I'll cry listening to the national anthem. Like you just said it then, and I'm just thinking about it. I'm getting goosebumps on myself. That's this feeling. Like it's just the hairs on the back of your neck, and you know you're getting all these goosebumps on you, because it's just an amazing feeling. Yeah. I remember crying listening to the national anthem. Yeah, just running out. It's none other that you could ever feel again.
Yeah. Did you have any family come to the game?
Yeah, a lot of my family actually flew from Milne Bay to Moresby to come and watch, and even just probably like you, I had family that I didn't even know that turned up.
Yeah. Well, they're still turning up this day. Asking for tickets on the side.
Always.
Yeah. Or turning up at the hotel. They always know what hotel I'm at.
Yeah, they do. They'll be there.
What room number.
Yeah. How they're related to you as well.
Yeah. And you got to do the old awkward answer. Oh, yeah. Do you remember me? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. it's good fun there. Could you understand talk piece in at the time? I know.
I understand majority of it. I can't speak it well, but I do understand. But knowing too that in Milne Bay is not talk piece in.
Yeah,
they speak Dobbo, and they have amongst them, you know, just the local island languages. So I know bits and pieces, but not too much now. I've lived in Australia for so long, but yeah, understand the basics of pigeon, especially if they talk real fast, it's a bit hard to slow down. But majority of the time I can understand what they're saying.
Sweet, yeah. What was your favorite part of the week in camp outside of the game?
I think just seeing guys that, you know, you've always looked up to. I remember that first time, I think it was the first game, had not Trevor Exton, Stanley Jean was there, McKaylee. I got to play Tommy O'Reilly. Like that was amazing. I think it was like his last game. I can't remember if Marcus played. You might not have. But just being in camp with all those guys, I was just in awe. Yeah. Like every day, just sort of, oh, how good is this? Paulie Aiton playing alongside Tu Māori as well. Keithy Peters, like just guys, you're just like, oh wow, how good is this? I'm living the dream for a week. It was amazing. It was great. And then to get the chance to make the European tour and just to follow them around and, you know, be like, you know, basically I was sent out to do all the little jobs for them. So a lot of times I was, especially in France, I was running around to get a lot of bottles of wine that I'd sneak in for them. Trevor was good because I was studying, so I wasn't making much money. I didn't work at all, so I was just living off footy money. But Trevor would give me a bit of money. I'd go buy it, and it'd be pretty cheap. So I didn't tell him how cheap it was. And he'd go, keep the change every time. So I was just earning my money that way. But, yeah, it was fun. Trev is such a good person. Steve Francisca's as well. But it's just fun. Just fun being there and seeing him in action and watching him play. Like, just when you're so young and you've seen him play for so long, it's just like, wow,
yeah.
How good's this?
What city were you in France?
I think we're in Bordeaux. We went to a few places, Bordeaux, I think. What's the city where the big, it's like brick wall right around the whole town?
That's not Girona, is it?
No, I know Bordeaux was one. We went to a couple different places. One with a big castle. We stayed in a castle once.
Castle every town.
Oh, yeah. but we got to stay one. It's pretty cool. A bit eerie.
Carcassonne?
Yes, Carcassonne. Yes, Carcassonne.
Yeah. Anyway, that would have been good going on a tour with the team.
Yeah.
Getting that experience in.
Oh, it was amazing.
Young age.
I think it was like 4 weeks or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
4 weeks maybe of, just traveling and, you know, free hotels and just free food and just, you know, getting to train and play amongst all these guys you get to you grew up watching. It was just, it's amazing. It's hard to, you know, when you come back, hard to find anything that's going to be the same experience again. But, it was great.
On game day, what do you normally do? Do you have any rituals?
Look, I used to be right into rituals, so I'd make sure, you know, I'd eat pasta or pizza the night before. I'd have to drink 3 bottles of Gatorade. I'd have to have the same tights, make sure they're always the same. You know, I had to eat at a certain time. There were a few things, but as I sort of got older, I guess that sort of pushed away, just to understand that, you know, it's just how preparation is throughout the whole time, not just that the few days leading into the game. So I sort of forgot about it, but yeah, it was a lot. I still do the Gatorade thing. Like, I'm not sure why, but I'll drink 3 Gatorades the night before. I think that's going to do something for me, get all the electrolytes in. And I still eat pizza and pasta. And, you know, my eldest boy, Mannix, you know, now he's only 8, but, you know, night before it's, hey, Dad, I need my pasta, my pizza and my Gatorade.
Yeah.
You know, that's what footy players do. So, okay, that's what we do then.
Yeah. Oh, nice. They must see like a pretty good example because you do the cleaning and stuff around the house too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know when I speak about on this podcast, I want to encourage people in PNG. You know, I see a lot of, you know, people on the streets just, you know, throwing rubbish out and, you know, too lazy to clean up. And I know the attitude in the village is pretty casual, relaxed. There's also rubbish everywhere and people are not willing to do the dirty work.
Mm.
You know, the cleaning are too good for, you know, picking up the broom and sweeping the floor. What advice do you have for someone like that? Because, you know, I'm someone who likes to have my area clean.
Yeah.
And I think it shows a good example for others that you're never too good to, you know, go pick up that rubbish, even if it's not yours.
I think, you know, just remembering that one small thing makes a huge difference to everyone else. You know, someone sees you do something, they go, oh, what are you doing? But you keep doing it and they understand, you know, this is cleaning up a place. Well, it seems to stem from that and follow. And it takes, I guess, more so like a leader. I'm sure if, you know, you were doing it in your village and someone's like, David Mead, the Ori King's doing it. Mm-hmm. Speaking up, well, why is he doing that? Well, that's sort of a flow-on effect.
Yeah.
Like even now, I walk over our whole retirement village. If I see rubbish, even if it's a tissue that's probably got snot in, I'll still pick it up on the ground. Like I don't understand why you wouldn't want to do that, because, you know, cleanliness is a big thing, especially now with COVID. You know, we should be as hygienic and as clean as we can be, and contribute to a really nice clean environment for the safety of all of us.
Yeah.
As well, particularly at home, I would think too.
Yeah, I think in terms of, you know, throwing rubbish on the ground, I heard the best quote when I first signed with the Bronx. We're into the dressing sheds and, you know, Wayne was doing his pre-season talk. And the last thing he said was, and don't throw rubbish on the ground. If you throw rubbish on the ground, that means you don't respect other people. Because you're expecting someone else to pick that rubbish up for you. So I think that was, it's something that stuck to my mind. And it's an easy message to pass on as well, because, you know, it's coming from one of the greatest coaches that Australia's ever seen. But yeah, I thought that was a pretty good way to put it, because
I would think so too. Like I don't know if they do in PNG, but it, I think too, like part and parcel, that's grand that culture and doing it. And if you know, if you had, you know, somewhere where you could recycle, like I could imagine if in PNG you had 10 cents for a bottle, I could imagine there'd be a lot of bottles being picked up.
I
think there's some form there then in future recycling and sustainability will be something huge for Papua New Guinea particularly, that could support that. But I think that would then initiate people wanting to, you know, it's not a great way to initiate by spending money, but
yeah,
you know, money helps something else, for especially when you consider that PNG's pretty poor. Yeah. I think, you know, something like that would be pretty inspiring, and would help clean the whole place up, I would imagine.
Yeah,
especially for sure. The oceans and stuff like that.
I've just got a few rapid fire questions as we get closer to the end of this podcast. If you could say one thing to a 13-year-old you, knowing what you know now, what would it be?
Probably don't change your journey. I would think I've probably had some ups and downs in my life, but I would just say trust the process.
Yeah.
You have to go through adversity to better yourself and find out who you really are and the person you want to be.
Nice, I like that. Your favorite music?
Would be country or rock. Either or. Run into Chris Stapleton at the moment. And he's probably someone I listen to at the moment quite a lot.
Your favorite meal?
Pizza at the moment.
Your favorite PNG dish? Lamb flaps.
It would be lamb flaps. I can't help it. Lamb flaps, coriander, and ginger.
Is that it?
That'd probably be it. If not, you know, KFC.
Yeah. You've had beetle nut before?
Yep.
Yeah.
Not a fan. Thoughts? Not a fan.
Nah.
Yeah, I like to keep either. The teeth clean.
Yeah. I'm not even a fan of the effects.
No, really. Like, they're so varying. Sometimes you just feel like absolute shit.
Yeah.
You just start sweating and just really feel like, you know, they don't want to do anything. So, yeah, not a fan.
Favorite type of training?
Probably would be just running. Enjoy just running.
Favorite holiday destination?
Bali or Cambodia, outside of obviously home.
I know you're a pretty fit bloke, so I had to ask you, what's your best beep test score?
Best beep test score? I think it was 14 something. I think maybe more, but yeah. It went pretty well 1 year.
It's up there. Is there a book or documentary that you recommend the most?
It's varying, but if you listen to podcasts, I'd get you to listen to Simon Sinek, especially when he talks about if you're talking business about finite and infinite games. Really interesting process. It's just about, I guess, how you see your business being finite. That is, you have an end goal. So, you know, some places will make an end or get somewhere and be like, how good's this? We're here. He's basically saying it's great to celebrate your victories and celebrate where you are, but don't rest on your laurels, just because remember, you know, if you want to be a big organization, you got to think 20, 30 years ahead. That's where your goal and forever. So don't rest and keep growing and keep being innovative and challenge yourselves and, look at other opportunities.
If there was an animal that best described Tommy Butterfield, what would that animal be?
That's a hard one. I would think I would be maybe an eagle or something. Maybe a peacock, I don't know. Spread my wings and fly.
Tommy, is there any final words, any recommendations or ask for, you know, what people should do?
As I said, I think it's always important to find a purpose in your life. Again, you don't know when that you'll find that, but it's a journey. But when you do find it, if it be very fulfilling. As I said, sometimes you go down different paths, but sometimes those different paths actually you realise where you want to be in life. So I think trust the journey, trust every process. Sometimes you got to go through a lot of adversity, but that's what makes you. And I guess just continue to treat and respect people. Yeah. I think the way you treat people is how ultimately you looked at, and it always puts you a good stead in life anyway.
Yeah, oh, that's awesome, mate. And to finish off, is there a charity or cause that you support, or is there a cause related to the retirement village that people can?
Anything to do with the Cancer Council or Guide Dogs, I think is very important as well. So I'd support any of those two charities currently. And we also just help with support the Breakfast Club, which is a charity for the homeless. Obviously, there's a big increasing homeless community, I think, especially through COVID as well. So I think anything to support the homeless is something big.
Tommy, thanks for being on the show, mate. I appreciate you. You know, it's been a big day at work, driving down from Redcliffe and, sharing some great stories, great insights. I'm sure a lot of people, especially in PNG and hopefully in Milne Bay there, get to listen to this and be proud of one of their own.
Yeah, well, hopefully, on the way and hopefully start to be the governor next to Milne Bay. That's after the CEO is the governor, so we'll see what happens.
Well, mate, when I turn into Joe Rogan, I'll get the governor on.
Oh, nice. We'll be there.
Thanks, Tommy.
If you've enjoyed this episode, then I'd love if you would hit that subscribe button, leave a comment or a review, and share it with anyone you think might enjoy it as well. For more behind-the-scenes content, head to my Instagram at davidmead411 and feel free to slide into my DMs if there's anyone you would love to hear from. I can't wait to bring you another episode next week, and thanks for listening to the David Mead Podcast.